So are we going to start on one or after one? should we start? Hello and welcome to the Android Developers Backstage. Android Developers Backstage, episode number 5. I'm Chet Haas from the UI Toolkit team on Android.
I'm Tor Norby from the Tools team on Android.
And today we have...
I'm Tim Murray from the RenderScript team.
And the reason Tim is with us is because I saw Jason Sams the other day. Jason was the guy behind, like, he started RenderScript years ago, so it's sort of his baby. And I said, Jason, we'd love to have a conversation about RenderScript. And he immediately walked me over to Tim. And I don't know whether that's because Tim is the right guy to talk to or Jason did not want to talk to me.
It's so probably both.
I think it's both.
I think we'll discover that today, at least one side of that. So in the meantime, what do you do on the RenderScript team?
So in general, I work on the core RenderScript runtime and programming model and documentation and APIs and everything else like that.
That sounds like what everyone else on RenderScript probably works on. Does everybody just like share responsibilities or do you have focuses in there?
We have
foci.
Some different focuses. So my focus is more on like the developer facing side of things. So the core API, what developers actually write. Other people are more focused on the compiler that we integrate with. We have really heavy LLVM integration. So that's a big part of our
So it's workload. A script that gets compiled?
Yeah.
What is RenderScript?
That is a... So essentially, it's our way to let you write things on Android without using native tools that run fast. Essentially, you know, we can run on CPU, we can run on GPU, we can run on whatever processor you have available. And we compile on the device, and so we can do all sorts of tuning at runtime for the particular device you're on. And essentially, you write a script and you hand it to the RenderScript runtime, and what you're saying is, I just want this to go as fast as possible.
So how does that differ from framework code? You write in Java, at runtime, it gets turned into machine instructions, and on the toolkit team, at least we try to run on GPU and run stuff as fast as possible. So where's the sweet spot for RenderScript versus just writing more Java code?
So it's kind of two sides of that. The first is we focus mainly on data parallel code. So we're really good at things like image processing right now, for example. And we don't have a runtime, and we compile scripts within that runtime, but we don't have a lot of the same sorts of safety checks, per se, as, say, Dahlberger Art, because we have much more constrained state for a script. Essentially, you have one function. You can't call arbitrary functions outside of this. You write your script, it has the main compute kernel that you're calling. And you can't call into an arbitrary Java function, you can't call into an arbitrary C function. You have a self-contained kernel. And so as a result, we can do a lot of safety checks in the compiler and immediately before running the kernel. And so when we do actually compile the kernel, when we get to the point of running it, we can just run kind of all the normal assembly you'd get from a really optimized native version without having to write native code and without sacrificing the same kind of safety that you get from a higher level language like Java.
And so this compilation you're talking about, that is happening not at install time, but at runtime. So it's like JIT.
It is JIT, yes.
Okay.
But there's two pieces to it, right?
There are two pieces, yeah. So the RenderScript toolchain is kind of complicated. Essentially, when an application developer compiles their application, they first compile their .rs source files into a .bc file, which is essentially LLVM bitcode. And the LLVM bitcode gets packaged with the application. And at runtime, when that script is first instantiated as a Java object, because all of our APIs right now, we have Java and C++ APIs, but when you first instantiate your script as an object and say you're going to make a function call into it, we load the .bc file, and then the runtime will compile that to whatever device is appropriate. On a lot of devices, or on a lot of hardware, this may be the CPU. another pieces of hardware, you may have a GPU driver available. And so you can compile that script to both the CPU and the GPU. And the runtime may switch between the CPU or the GPU or any other processor, depending on what's going on in the system.
OK, so you said you may compile it to the CPU or GPU, but in fact, RenderScript is making that decision for you, right?
Yes.
The developer or RenderScript doesn't care where it gets executed.
Yeah.
RenderScript is going to determine the best place.
Essentially, because of the kind of ridiculous nature of architectural diversity on Android, there's not really any good way to say, yeah, I know I definitely want to run this script on a GPU. Because the GPUs are all so different from one another that a lot of times you may have a GPU that it turns out it needs way more parallelism than you have in your script to actually get any sort of decent performance. Or maybe you don't have the right level of floating point precision on the GPU for your script. Or maybe the GPU is already overloaded because you have an ultra high density display and it's not a very powerful GPU to begin with. So
how does RenderScript know? Do you have like a database of known hardware that you go, oh, you have this graphics card and this CPU, therefore I'm going to do this? Or do you actually like measure at runtime based on what's going on?
Right now, we work really closely with vendors. And the vendors are the ones that actually make that decision. So generally, the GPU vendors are the ones deciding, should this be running on the GPU or should this be running on the CPU?
I love the idea of a GPU vendor coming to us and saying, you know, our GPU really sucks. We wish you would execute on the CPU instead.
No, it's actually, it's happened.
Maybe they don't want this to interfere with the graphics, you know, like, please.
Well, that's the thing. So when you look at, say, like the Nexus 10, it's what, 2560 by 1600?
It's huge resolution for the GPU.
It's a ridiculous resolution because we're talking about, I think the GPU is something like 80 or 100 gigaflops. The first compute GPU that anyone really used for compute back in 2006 was the NVIDIA G80. That was something like 400 gigaflops. So we're trying to do kind of the same kind of stuff that, you know, people are doing on this GPU. And meanwhile, the GPU we have in our tablet is one-fifth the performance and has to render it, yeah, you know, the equivalent of a 30-inch monitor at the same time. So a lot of times there's not a huge amount of spare GPU horsepower to throw at things. So you have to be more flexible.
Is there also a problem of getting the data down there and then back out? Is there a lot of readback going on, or are you just processing and keeping it in texture?
So this is one of the fun things about mobile versus the more kind of
shared
HPC
memory architectures.
Yeah. So in the traditional like GPU compute model, you have to, you know, copy data from your CPU memory over to GPU memory because they have discrete pools of DRAM, and you know, maybe you're going over PCI Express or something like that. In mobile, it's all the same DRAM. So on some devices, we have to do a cache flush. On other devices with better cache coherence, there's not even a cache flush. You can just start accessing the memory. And so the latency to get between CPU and GPU is pretty much a constant cost, and it's very small.
But is that the same as I know that one of the issues in the old days when you used JNI or Java mm-hmm. Native Interface was there was a pretty expensive boundary. So you didn't want to just, you know, write your input validation code in native code because mm-hmm. it was just the cost of actually invoking it was much larger than the benefit you'd have from that small loop. What is the trade-off for RenderScript? Like, when do you want to switch away from Java to actually making this call?
What we found is, I think our baseline latency for essentially executing a kernel, just an empty kernel over a reasonable data set, is a few milliseconds. So if you have, you know, say 100 microseconds of work, you're probably not going to get a huge benefit from, you know, trying to port that to RenderScript. If you have 100 milliseconds of work that you're doing all in Java, and say you're, you know, doing image processing code or like some computational photography thing, yeah, you probably won't port it because the cost of we still have JNI calls within our stack, right? Because we have our runtime lives inside native code, mm-hmm. But the the JNI cost is pretty minimal, we found. And so you can still get, you know, you can run a kernel and get results back within 10 milliseconds.
So when you're doing animation work, it's really important.
Probably not something you want to do on every frame.
No.
Make a single down call to do this stuff.
So it might be better than doing that image loop in Java and taking longer time than you have available for that frame.
True. Well, I mean, if you could pre-compute stuff. I mean, if you did that once to pre-compute the values you had, I don't know. So are you actually, like, every time you call down, you're basically spinning up the kernel to do some work? Like, is it that 10?
No, so the way it works is essentially we have a queue. And so most of our API calls are actually totally asynchronous. The only time we actually synchronize is when either a user explicitly requests it, which is really only useful for benchmarking or something like that, or when you're getting results out of RenderScript.
Okay.
So as soon as something becomes visible back to Java or C++ code, then we have to synchronize and wait for RenderScript to finish whatever operations have been enqueued up to that point.
Okay. So if you're using RenderScript to do a computation on the UI thread, basically you'd call into RenderScript and it would return immediately.
Yep.
And then something is happening out there, and then you eventually get a callback saying, I'm done.
So we don't get a callback. We have kind of explicit copy in and copy out methods, mm-hmm. Which are not necessarily copies, depending on what you're passing. For example, with Java bitmaps, it's probably not a copy. But the copy to, like, a RenderScript allocation method will return immediately. But the copy from that RenderScript allocation back to, say, another Java bitmap will not return until the copy is actually completed.
Okay. So you frequently are operating on pixels and bitmaps. Is that why it's called RenderScript?
No, it's called RenderScript because originally it was designed as a graphics API. But every time we realized graphics was progressing at a pretty decent pace with GLES. And meanwhile, we could really use something for compute. So the basic framework was all there for compute. It was just a matter of hooking up more compute-specific bits and working against GPU compute drivers running with it and things like that.
Okay, so it's really a compute script that just has the name render script for historical
reasons. Yeah, at this point, yes.
We'd already had the word render approved by illegal and branding. So it was just easier to just stick with it. So we should probably take a step back. I feel like if we were writing an article, we just kind of skipped to the middle of the article and there was like no introduction. It would be nice to get an overview of what the pieces are of RenderScript, especially since I know there's been renewed focus on compute in the last couple of years. So there's the filter scripts, there's some intrinsic stuff, there's mm-hmm. the new like NDK or C++
yep.
API. So give us the overview. Where are we at?
So the basic kind of core that we have is the RenderScript runtime. And this is largely invisible. It ships, it's a shared object on the on an Android build. And this contains either, a GPU driver, or we have a CPU driver that's we've optimized pretty heavily. And connected to that primarily is the Java API. And that lives in Android RenderScript star. And essentially, this will use the platform version of RenderScript. And you get all the latest features. And it runs fast. Cool. Next to that, the issue with Android RenderScript in that class path, I guess, is that some of those features are only available on the latest version of Android. It's that eternal problem of old devices.
It certainly is. Yep.
So we spent a lot of last year working on a support library for RenderScript. And that finally shipped in September of last year, I think.
It's V7?
V8.
V8.
So it runs back to Froyo. And what that does is essentially it gets the right now the Android 4.3 version of RenderScript and makes that available all the way back to Froyo. And the way that works essentially is the application or the APK will bundle both a shared library that is essentially a stripped down RenderScript runtime and both LLVM bitcode that we can JIT on a newer device and precompiled CPU binaries for older devices. So if you're running on, say, like a Gingerbread device and you hit some RenderScript code using the support library, we will load the packaged runtime, which will then load whatever precompiled CPU scripts you need. If you're running on, say, a Nexus 5, the support library will call into the Java runtime that is already on the device, which will call into the platform render script. And then that'll use GPU driver, CPU driver, whatever. So you can take one APK and basically have it run as fast as possible anywhere.
Okay. So the main difference between those functionally is you can access the newer GPU functionality as of what the Jelly Bean release is. I forget when the GPU.
MR2. So we added the first GPU driver we had was in 4.2.
Okay.
It was Nexus 10.
Okay.
4.3, we picked 4.3 just because we added a bunch of other useful functionality there. And we thought that's a reasonable baseline.
Okay, so that's like supportlib versus framework.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are the actual functional pieces?
So they're kind of two things, two sides of RenderScript. So on one side you have, we call them intrinsics. And essentially the intrinsics are built-in functions that are baked into the RenderScript driver. And there are things like YUV to RGB conversion, Gaussian blur, convolution, things like that. Pretty basic things that a lot of developers will use. And because they're baked into the RenderScript driver, we can heavily optimize them. So for example, in our CPU driver, all of these are hand-tuned Neon assembly, which is a lot of Neon assembly, but it means it runs really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what you can do then is, let's say you want to do a Gaussian blur in a Java bitmap, you can create a RenderScript context, create allocations based on your Java bitmaps, which as of 4.3, we'll just map those Java bitmaps directly into RenderScript. There's not any sort of copying involved. And then with, I think, three lines of code, you can create a Gaussian blur intrinsic, set a radius on it and run it. And then you just have to copy that back to another Java bitmap or write that to a Java bitmap. And that's it. You're done. You've done a Gaussian blur pretty much as fast as it can be done on an Android device.
Okay. And then the only twist with the developer model with RenderScript that I encountered last time I used it, which was quite a while ago, is the need to allocate at the Java level. Like you're creating these allocation objects, there is
yes.
no allocation going on at the RenderScript.
Yes. So we try very hard to keep kind of that sort of resource management mm-hmm. outside of the core RenderScript kernels, because
that was easier to write the code though.
That's true. I mean, writing malloc on GPUs is really hard. But the bigger problem is a lot of GPUs just kind of can't.
Yeah.
And so
common denominator.
Common denominator, and you don't want to say let people have one code path in some kernel that'll be called maybe one in a million times, and it happens to maybe potentially call malloc. Because most GPU drivers will see that and say, okay, we'll never run that on the GPU, mm-hmm. ever, because we can't guarantee that this will never be called. So it's easier in a lot of ways if we just restrict what people can do, both to kind of encourage best practices in terms of getting code to run well.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Chad has often wanted to disable the constructor call from inside a draw method, right?
It would would be nice to enforce things, yes. Instead of continually telling people to do the right things, but if they didn't hear that message, they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to set up the program model in such a way that
they can't
tie themselves. It's hard to to hang yourself.
Okay. So in the example you were talking about with the Gaussian blur, where you've got this Java-based bitmap sitting on the heap, and you're going to call the intrinsic to do the blur, you create an allocation around the bitmap then?
Yes.
Is there a bitmap allocation object?
So we have, was it create from bitmap?
Yeah.
So we added this, we have these flags for allocations that basically say how you're going to use them. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't looked, because you've been saying allocations, I thought you were just talking generically about the fact that you do something, you know, in Java to allocate something as an object. Allocation is actually, a concept.
Yeah. It is a concept. So in RenderScript, there are basically two pools of memory in terms of RenderScript's view of the world. There is memory inside the RenderScript pool and memory outside of it. And we can't access memory outside of it at all. You can't access arbitrary pointers or anything like that.
There was that security backdoor.
Yeah, sorry.
I had in mind. It's going to sell for a lot of money.
So you need to allocate memory inside the RenderScript pool. Lots of reasons for this. The big two are GPUs a lot of times do really specific things in terms of how they allocate memory. And we need to make some guarantees about like stride for 2D allocations. So we can do things like neon, because you can, I don't think you can make neon calls if on an address that isn't aligned to 16 bytes.
And neon is a special hardware
instruction? Neon is the SIMD instruction set for ARM. Intel has SSE, I think MIPS has something, but I don't know what it is.
But as a RenderScript user, you don't have to learn
it? It's invisible, no.
Okay. So what does the programming model look like? If I want to write RenderScript, does it look like JavaScript, Visual Basic? I mean, what's the...
So this is the other kind of side to RenderScript other than the intrinsic. So we've been talking a lot about the Java API. We also have the language for writing a kernel. And the kernel language is, for all intents and purposes, C99.
Without malloc?
With no malloc. It is a stripped down standard library. You probably don't want to do some things like recursion, for example, because GPUs are bad at recursion too, generally. But it looks like C99.
That's great, so it's going to be familiar.
It looks very familiar.
You said that there was no function calls, it would look like BASIC.
No, I'm sorry.
No I numbers then.
No, okay. Maybe Fortran. Okay. We'll get to Fortran soon. Right.
Tabs are significant then. You'd love that. All right.
So the way the kernel language works is you write...
Just to interrupt you again, kernel. Now, are you using that in the operating system sense of kernel, or
no.
Is that more in the math sense of a kernel?
The math sense, where essentially... I don't know why it got picked as the term, but it's the
lawyers had approved it.
Yeah. Well, no, it's been that way for, I don't know, a decade or more now, but it is the core of your algorithm. It is the thing you want to go really fast, the one thing you really care about.
Got it. Okay.
So you write your kernel as a single-threaded C function. Meanwhile, you need to be able to take into account all the paths that you may want to run when executing over some amount of data. So what you get as in your kernel function as arguments is you can get an input from an allocation, and then you get the coordinates within that allocation. So you get maybe like an x coordinate or an x and y coordinate if you're in 1D or 2D allocation. So if you get, say, like a RGBA 8888, you'll get a UCHAR4.
So the allocation is just big chunk of data.
Yeah.
And then you're getting some information about where you're supposed to be operating within that. So
you get past the pixel value as well as the value at whatever cell of the allocation you are, as well as the coordinates for that cell. Mm-hmm. And then depending on how you write your kernel, you can either write to an arbitrary allocation, you can write to another allocation of the same size. So let's say you pass in a 1080p bitmap and you want to write to another 1080p bitmap. You can just in recent versions of the kernel language, you just return your the new pixel value you want.
So let's do something simple. Let's say that I want to write a render script to invert an image, right?
Okay.
So let's say, so in Java then, I would create my bitmap loaded from an asset or whatever, and then I would make an allocation out of it, and then my render script would, my kernel then be sort of, its job is to take one pixel and then invert it into the other one, and then I'll be called repeatedly, or will I iterate myself?
You will not iterate yourself.
Okay, so I'm just doing, I'm like a pixel operator.
Yeah, so you're a pixel operator, essentially.
It's a pixel shader, right? It's the equivalent of that.
Kind of.
How so?
So we are significantly more flexible than normal pixel shaders. The big difference, I think, is we have kind of arbitrary scatter and gather. So you can write to an arbitrary allocation. You can read from an arbitrary allocation.
Oh, so you can see what your neighbors are?
If you want to, yeah,
are.
You can. Okay. You can see, you can take, say, if you want to take in 8 images or write, you know, do some reduction or accumulation and write to an output somewhere, you can do that too.
So that's why this is suitable for a blur, because I can go and look at my neighbors and compute some neighborhood average. Okay.
So for invert, you would basically, you know, you get in X and Y, but you don't care about X and Y here because
Also hands me the pixel value.
It hands you the pixel value.
Okay.
So you would basically do, you know, return 255 minus N, or 0xFF minus N, whatever. And the RenderScript runtime will take that return value and write it to the equivalent cell.
So am I getting like the full RGB plus alpha, and I need to operate on each one of them, or am I being handed for each color channel then?
No, it depends on how you set up your image, but we have like an RGBA 8888 type, so, and that is equivalent to a UCHAR4 in C.
Okay.
So you can just operate on the vector.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, so intrinsics and other pieces of render script. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're reading the
review,
clicking on links further in the article.
Yes.
There's the NDK API that came online, what, in the last release?
November?
Okay.
It was pretty recent.
All right. So now you can call it from C++. So originally the argument was, hey, you can write this code that is platform independent and yet runs as fast as native code. And now native code can use it. So then the argument is, yeah, it has the like GPU, CPU, multiple.
So yeah, so we do have we do have different processor support. So we run on GPUs, and you know we added support in KitKat for the Qualcomm Adreno 600 and 800. So Nexus 4, Nexus 5, Nexus 7, all use some variant of that chip, and so they all now have GPU support in RenderScript with KitKat. Nexus 10 has GPU support, has since 4.2. And
do you have a sense of what the support level is for non-Nexus devices, recent ones?
For GPU support, it's not great, in large part because right now there are so many Qualcomm devices that that driver is that's going to be a big chunk of the high-end market right now. And so as other devices get upgraded to KitKat, I think you'll see a pretty significant uptick there.
Cool.
I know like Galaxy S4, HTC One, lots of other devices over the past year. A lot of the Sony devices all use Qualcomm in some way. So that will be a very nice driver for a lot of people. We're pretty happy with it. We've worked very closely with Qualcomm on that. So it should perform very well for people. But getting back to the NDK, we want people to be able to use the GPU wherever. But the other problem is RenderScript, as it was, as a Java API, is great when you're writing a new app. But if you have an app that you've written for 2 years, it's probably got a pretty significant native code chunk if you are really concerned about performance, because you didn't have a great alternative. So we want to make it, we wanted to make it kind of feasible for people to start porting more code to RenderScript. And you know, if you go to a developer that has a large application that they've been working on for a long time, and you say, "Hey, start over," it's not going to happen. But we wanted people to be able to access, you know, the value that we have, and get something out of it without having to, you know, pay a huge cost in terms of development time and things like that. So we added native bindings. They look very similar to the Java bindings in that you have to create an allocation and pass it to the render script runtime, and you have your kernels and your scripts. So it all looks pretty much the same. It's just now you can call it from C++.
Okay. And it would be interesting to know some of the examples that, that actually use RenderScript. I know internally, I saw Nicola talk about his work on the Gallery.
Yeah, so Gallery is
a lot of the filters in KitKat.
Gallery is the big one. So AOSP Gallery, or Gallery in AOSP now.
So people can check out the code.
People can look at the code, yeah. It's the photo editor part is overwhelmingly written in RenderScript, I think. There is a lot of code in there. And it all seems to be really good code. Mm-hmm. So certainly use that as an example if you want.
I know on the framework side, we also use it very sparingly, I think specifically around, is it text shadows?
Shadows, yes, drop shadows for text. Okay. So starting in, let's say 4.3.
Yeah, go ahead, say it.
You started, the framework started using the RenderScript Gaussian Blur Intrinsic for text shadows.
Okay.
Can you think of any, well, it doesn't have to be existing examples, but can you think of any good non-image processing uses for this? Like, would you use it for like OCR or any kind of matrix multiplication?
So, I'm just wondering. So linear algebra in general, yes, you could. I'm a little hesitant to recommend that too strongly, just because we don't have a BLOS library at the moment. It's something we're talking about doing.
Can we explain that term for those listeners?
Like, I cannot believe you don't know that, Chet. Totally embarrassing.
Prior to working on Android, I worked on supercomputers. So think BLOS library is just like, no, everybody knows that. Basic linear algebra subsystem, I think. It's generally the set of basic functions that for either vector-vector, matrix-vector, or matrix-matrix computation.
Okay, linear algebra.
So basically, to use it today, you'd have to
roll your own matrix multiplier or whatever, okay. And that sounds...
Well, can you think of any other non-image processing examples that you've seen of RenderScript?
So, I can, but I don't know if I can talk about them.
Okay,
right.
So
all right,
we
sorry.
Won't.
So it seems like, to some extent, image processing has to be a sweet spot because it has to be a big enough set of operations
yes.
that you can go down there and do this and not return for a while and be happy with the result. As opposed to, like, we don't use it generally throughout the framework library because on any given frame, I don't want to take a 10 millisecond hit to wait on some result for something.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's not 10 milliseconds, but no, it's not something you want to necessarily insert into a very short pipeline like that, just mm-hmm. because, let's say, you don't want to necessarily keep the GPU active like at that level all the time. It could go badly.
Right. So it seemed like at least images were a good place to start where the alternatives weren't good.
Images were a good place to start because, most image processing algorithms are very parallel, and so it's not hard to get good performance when you have kind of a runtime and a compiler focused on extracting parallelism and exposing that to a given processor.
Actually, the parallelism
encryption
was...
Encryption, too, seems like it'd be good for this.
I don't know. I know nothing about
tons of
encryption
like
algorithms.
Listeners writing password crackers are not going to, turn
so,
your GPU.
So I will admit, I did see a Litecoin miner.
Oh, I see.
In the Play Store that uses RenderScript. So
that's good. Put all your devices to work.
I know.
I'm sure it won't affect your battery life at all.
So I think it's worth mentioning the parallelism thing. So you're saying the GPU drivers are problematic, prior to a certain release because maybe the driver doesn't exist for that, so mm-hmm. we're not doing GPU. But RenderScript compute was really powerful before then anyway. Like, it's really cool that now we can scale the GPUs, mm-hmm. But the reality is, even if you have only one CPU, there's a lot of optimization work that's gone into the library.
Yeah.
But the reality is most devices are now multi-core, and it scales automatically for you.
Yeah, so we will just take however many cores you have and run work across them.
Yeah.
You know, we play nicely with power management and things like that. So, you know, we won't set a device on fire, anything like that.
Or if we do, we feel really bad about it.
I mean, yes. We've never blown up a device. You know, when you're dealing with pre-production when you're dealing with pre-production hardware, you might blow up a device.
Okay.
Nexus 5 in particular, early on, would.
It got hot at first. Yes.
We had some problems there.
Yeah. Are you? I'm thinking of the pocket on fire. Are you happy to see me, or is that a pre-production Nexus 5?
Let's talk about the tools. So know that you have Eclipse support, right?
We have Eclipse support. It is integrated into ADT.
Right. And is there Gradle support?
Gradle support is brand new, yes.
It's good.
I haven't actually used it. I'm still basically living in the platform tree, so.
Oh, so you use makefiles?
I use makefiles.
Manual invocation.
And occasionally I use ANT.
Okay.
And the state of debugging?
Debugging doesn't really exist.
Okay.
So this is something we're working on solving in the long run, but it's tricky because
you just make an allocation around print line, and then you basically write into the print line allocation, and that's how you get your printf debugging.
Okay. Hey, is there any questions?
Well, actually, printf debugging we're okay.
All right. Hey, that's debugging.
So we do have a function call that will actually print to logcat from a kernel. So you do have some level of printf support.
Just in terms for every pixel.
Yeah.
Log spam.
Yeah, log spam, yes. In terms of an actual debugger, this is something we're trying to solve in the longer term.
Yep.
It gets into issues with kind of the underlying LLVM toolchain that we need to figure out before we can actually ship something.
Okay.
But, maybe this year.
Okay.
I do know that in Studio we have basic render script support. So if you open an RS file, I think you guys published a grammar. And in IntelliJ, there's a way to generate editor support from a grammar, so we have that. So you have some basic help. Although I guess if it's C9 compatible, I guess a lot of editors would do a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, I use Emacs and I just put it in C mode, and that's fine.
Okay.
So I know early on, one of the pain points with render script was the amount of developer information out there.
Yes.
And finding out exactly what the functions were and what you were supposed to actually do.
You guys should go talk to some podcasts and whatnot and sort of get the word out.
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
What would developers do now? How do they spin up on actually writing this stuff? Like, checking out the gallery code is awesome, but maybe if they actually want to read some overviews.
Gallery code would be kind of intense as introduction.
As a learning step.
So we have some information online at developerandroid.com.
Okay.
We have an overview online. We have API reference. With all the Java API reference.
And that includes the intrinsics as well as the calls that go down into the custom written kernel.
Yes, and we have another set of documentation for all the like math library calls you can make from a kernel.
Okay, and the language documentation. So if you are writing your kernel,
the language documentation is less. Less thorough, mainly because it is such a strict subset of C99.
I guess, yeah, when I'm thinking language, I'm also thinking like the library. What do I do once I'm there?
Yeah.
I understand
so
C, I just
the runtime, like math library, and all the library calls you can make, we have documentation for that online.
Okay.
In terms of tutorials, we're slowly pushing more out, but
In API demos, right?
There are some.
Samples.
We do have some demos. I don't know how many of them are actually in the SDK at this point.
Okay.
But we are pushing more out. We're going to push more out in the next SDK release, I think.
Okay. Cool. I'm all out of questions, Tor.
Me too.
So, have you said your piece?
I guess so.
Are you all done? Anything else you want to tell us about RenderScript?
can't think of anything right now.
Well, we usually ask our guests sort of, you know, what they worked on prior to this. And you mentioned briefly that you worked on supercomputers before. That sounds kind of
interesting. Yeah, so I worked at NVIDIA on CUDA, and which was kind of the first big commercial GPU compute API and language. And I worked a lot on the programming model for that, and specifically focused on kind of high-performance computing, big supercomputers, worked a lot on...
So what's the transition from, you know, these giant supercomputers to these tiny supercomputers?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It's not that different. The one difference that is kind of noticeable, two differences that are really obvious. One, you don't care about kind of network connections. So in high-performance computing, you know, you need to run your compute, run your operation, and get results to your to other nodes in the supercomputer. And you have to do that as quickly as possible, otherwise it doesn't matter how much processing power you're going to, you add to the machine as a whole, you're, you know, latency bound.
Right.
So you need, you really have to worry about latency. You know, phones, less so. And then thermal and power on mobile is fun. And that's a big part of why, you know, we don't say, like, this will definitely run on the GPU. Because if you actually run a modern SoC and you run, you know, you run the GPU flat out, you run the CPU flat out, you do all this at the same time, you're going to hit thermal throttling in probably under 10 seconds now. So you have to be much more careful about power consumption and thermal management from a from kind of a system runtime point of view. You can't just say, oh yeah, I've got 225 watts available, and I've got liquid cooling and right. all sorts of stuff, go crazy. You have to actually, you know, use the power
wisely.
Yeah, at the on the right processor at the right time.
I remember in the, was it the late 90s when GPUs were getting to be these monster workhorses, and all of a sudden they just started coming out with these ridiculous heat sinks. It was much bigger than the CPUs.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, is that the future of phones then? Like everybody
just have a big fan back bolted onto the back of this tablet.
Yeah, fan and just these, you know, metal fins everywhere.
You know, it's kind of funny that you mention that. Because, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, nobody's going to put a fan on a phone. At least I hope not. You know, you hear a lot of SoC vendors talk about like dark silicon. And right now, essentially what you have is you can't turn on all of your SoC at the same time because the power draw is too great and the thermals are too bad. So, you know, as transistor size continues to shrink, you will get you can fit more and more stuff on a chip, but you can't turn all of it on. So you'll see vendors put down more and more kind of specialized processors, and you have to figure out some way to use them then. But you know, you'll have, you know, GPU, CPU, some DSPs, probably other stuff in the future. And, you know, those processors may be useful for, you know, say just crypto, something really good at integer math or something like that.
Recognizing hot words being spoken in the background.
For example. But, you know, you'll have more and more kind of architectural complexity in terms of the number of processors available. They won't be kind of general purpose or, you know, easily programmable necessarily. But, you know, our goal in the long term is to make all of, you know, as many of those processors as make sense available to Android developers so they can get, you know, good performance, good battery consumption, and, you know, be able to do this across all Android devices, not just the one they tested on or something like that.
It's cool stuff.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for coming by.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.